canyon was filled with mist, billowing gently in the morning sun, looking almost thick enough to walk on. From inside the cockpit, they could not see the bottom of the canyon. It was far too deep for that, even if the air had been perfectly clear. To their right and left, the cliff walls marched off beyond the horizon, red rock battlements, rugged with untold eons of weathering, tall and proud. Looking straight across the canyon, Voznesensky thought he could make out the jagged outline of the opposite wall, faint and wavering in the hazy distance. So far away.
"I don't see the landslide," Reed said.
"Nor do I. We must have drifted off course during the night.
I will take a navigational fix. Dmitry Iosifovich, you contact the base and tell them we have reached the canyon without falling into it."
Ivchenko muttered to himself as he leaned over slightly to reach the comm unit switches. He did not see the slight grin on his commander's face. Within a quarter hour, they had pinpointed their location with a fix from one of the navigation satellites deployed around the planet and were on their way to the lip of the landslide, some 5 kilometers westward. Voznesensky felt almost relaxed as he rode in the right-hand seat. Ivchenko had driven most of the night, slept a few hours, and now was driving again. He seemed fresh. His reflexes were sharp. Mikhail himself felt little better than he had since the scurvy had hit him. He was still weak, still achy. He had barely slept at all during the night. "The body affects the mind," he said to himself as they creak along at 20 kilometers per hour across the boulder-strewn red landscape. "When the body hurts, the mind becomes tired, easily confused, quick to despair. I must remember that. I must keep my thinking clear, no matter how my body feels."
"I think I see it."
Ivchenko's words snapped Voznesensky out of his musings. He followed the pilot's pointing finger with his eyes and saw, through the morning haze, what appeared to be a wide semicircle cut into the cliff edge, with a rusty red pile of dirt slumping down from its rim toward the bottom of the canyon far below.
"Yes, that must be it."
While Voznesensky checked the navigational display, Ivchenko said,
"You don't expect to go down that slope, do you?"
"We have come to rescue the team and the other rover," Voznesensky said.
The nav screen showed that they were in the right area. The trapped rover was sitting roughly two-thirds of the way down the ancient avalanche.
"Comrade cosmonaut," Ivchenko said, "what good would it do for us to trap ourselves alongside them?"
"What do you suggest?"
Voznesensky growled, feeling a sudden impatience with his cohort.
"I suggest,"
Ivchenko put an ironic emphasis on the verb,
"that we stop at the lip of the canyon and let them walk to us. That is the safest thing to do."
"And if they are too weak to make it?"
The cosmonaut bit his lip. Voznesensky waited for his answer, thinking, "If he says that we should go back to the dome without going down there and getting them, I'll throw him out the airlock without a suit."
"If they are too weak to make it,"
Ivchenko said slowly, "then I suppose we will have to go down on foot and help them."
"We?"
"Dr. Reed and myself," Ivchenko said. "You should remain here in the rover, Mikhail Andreevich."
Voznesensky felt his heart expand. He broke into a huge grin.
"Well spoken, Dmitry Iosifovich. Brave words. But I can think of something much better."
Tony Reed thought, "I should hope so. No one's going to get me to go out there." Sol 40. Noon. Jamie turned the ridged little dial on the binoculars. The rippled expanse of sand swam into sharp focus. "It must be an ancient crater that's been filled in with dust," he said, as much to himself as the others clustered in the cockpit.
"Why doesn't the wind blow the dust away?"
Joanna asked. He put the glasses down. She was sitting next to him in the right-hand seat, her face pale, her hair tangled and matted. Her breath stank. Mine does too, Jamie told himself. Everybody's does. Connors, looking more ragged than ever, sat on the floor between the two seats. His coveralls were rumpled and dark with sweat stains. Ilona stood behind him, leaning wearily on the seat backs. She looked bedraggled, too. Like Ioana, she had not had the strength to brush her hair. Sick and weary as they were, though, they were all eager to catch the first glimpse of Voznesensky's rover.
I don't think there's enough power in the wind to clean out the crater. The air is too thin, even when it blows at 200 knots. The crater must have steep walls, probably made by a meteorite coming in from almost straight overhead.
The wind can gradually fill up the crater with dust,
Ioana surmised.
And once it is full, it remains full.
Right, said Jamie.
We're talking millions of years here, he added silently. Nothing goes quickly on Mars. Come back in a million years, and the rover will still be sitting here, most likely. He raised the binoculars to his eyes once again. If the oddly rippled sand represented the area of the crater, then it was more than a kilometer across. Jamie could see its boundary clearly, a wide circle where the little wavelets of red sand ended and the ground was more heavily littered with rocks and boulders. He remembered arguing with Nagid about the frequency of such dust-filled craters. The Egyptian called them ghost craters and believed they peppered the landscape even where the ground looked relatively smooth. Jamie had disagreed, but Abdul was right. We've fallen into a ghost crater. I should have noticed the difference in the ground, Jamie berated himself. I should have avoided this area. If only I had been sharp enough.
There they are!
Ioana pointed eagerly, her wan face suddenly wreathed in a smile. Following her extended arm, Jamie saw the rover nosing over the crest of the slope like a fat silver caterpillar with a big, gleaming, bulbous head inching their way.
Greetings, fellow travelers.
Voznesensky's voice was harshly rasping in a control panel speaker. To the four of them, it sounded like an angel's sweet melody. Jamie glanced down at the comm screen. The cosmonaut looked weak, strained, sweating as he sat at the controls of the second rover and guided it down the slope of the ancient landslide with excruciatingly deliberate, patient care. Tony Reed was hunched behind him, his face drawn, pale, nervous. Both men were in their coveralls. Putting the binoculars to his eyes again, Jamie saw a figure in a brilliant red hard suit plodding slowly toward them on foot in front of the rover, poking at the ground in front of him with a long pole, the way a blind man gropes along unfamiliar territory, the way a mountaineer feels his way across a snow-choked crevasse. Ivchenko trailed a tether from his waist, connected to the nose of the rover more than 20 meters behind him. The vehicle was inching along, but getting closer every moment. Trust Mikhail to use every safety precaution, Jimmy thought. Does he think Ivchenko's going to float away? For an absurd moment, it looked as if the cosmonaut was towing the ponderous rover.
They are coming, Ilona said in a choked whisper. They are coming to save us.
3 cheers for our side, said Connors weakly.
Jamie remained in the cockpit and watched their rescuers approaching. More than an hour went by as the rover trundled closer, agonizingly slow, with Ivchenko out front testing the ground. A blind man leading an elephant, Jamie thought.
Now be careful, he said to the cosmonauts. You see where the ground starts to break up into a series of little sand ripples?
Voznesensky's image in the display screen nodded its head. Ivchenko said from inside his helmet,
Yes, it is about 50 meters in front of me.
That's where the crater rim is, I'm pretty sure, Jamie said. It's filled with this very loose sand, more like dust. You'll have to take the rover around it, otherwise you'll get stuck too.
Voznesensky was peering at it suspiciously.
It seems quite wide.
I know. But you can work your way around it, can't you?
Going down, perhaps. I wonder about going up again.
Ivchenko's voice said,
It might be best to stop the rover at the edge of the loose soil and let me go through the area on foot. Then we can connect a safety line and winch them across to our rover. Can all four of you get into your hard suits?
Voznesensky asked,